welcome to the Thinking Pilates podcast, where show after show, we bring you a different way to think about teaching Pilates. We make you dig deep, ask the tough questions, and keep unraveling the rich layers of teaching movement. I'm Chantel Lopez, founder of Skillful Teaching, an international education company just for Pilates and movement teachers, and author of Moving Beyond Technique. I am so gratefully joined in this delightful and crazy endeavor by my sometimes co-host and podcast co-founder, master teacher, and mentor, Deborah Colway. Welcome to episode 39, another wonderful exploration with our new co-host, James Crater. We're just so damn excited to have him as a part of the team. The conversations we've had on and off recording have been incredibly rich, stirring up all kinds of edgy and fun topics we can't wait to share with you. In this episode, James and I use one of his recent articles titled What They're Really Saying Is, which we've linked to in the show notes. In this article, James shares a teaching experience, perhaps you'd even call it an epiphany, and it has everything to do with listening to what our students are not telling us, what they're not saying. We dive into some really cool stuff I've been exploring for myself this past year, including how the brain learns, something called cognitive overload, and top-down versus bottom-up processing. There are some really great ideas in this episode and, of course, lots of laughs. So let's get to it, shall we? Welcome back, everybody. Howdy, James. How's it going?
I'm good, Chantel.
Good. So this is our second round together, which is really exciting. And in episode 38, we linked to an article that you had just written, which was really, really valuable, really insightful. And I posted it on my Facebook page a couple of times, actually, just recently, maybe yesterday again, but also a few weeks ago. And it's gotten such wonderful response. I mean, people are really, really resonating with the topic. So the name of the article was What They're Really Saying Is. And it's striking to me because it's a topic and an area that I've been diving into a lot recently, but also over the last couple of years, you know, talking about skillfulness in teaching, right? Not about the technical stuff, but about how to be with our students. And I just wanted to share the kind of the premise of this article and then have you, you know, jump in with us and give us some sense of where this is coming from and heading to for you. But you open the article saying, it's a quote, "You're right, there's so much to feel," which is admittedly a response that you used to give students every time they would say, "There's so much to think about." And you know, I think that's so interesting because it's, you know, when I read that, I think, oh yeah, that's very much in line with what I feel like it's, what I feel like matters, right? Shifting attention from the thinking to the feeling. And I know that through our collaboration and what I know of you and your teaching, that this is very much in alignment on the surface, at least, with what you also feel like is important. And yet there was an insight, a really, really interesting and really relevant insight that you had about this, what you called canned response. And that really is what the article is about, is shifting the response that you had for your students to something even more potent, I guess is what I would say. So tell us about this.
Yeah. So, you know, I think ultimately, yes, I would love to get my students, my clients, my fellow teachers to vibrate and become more aware of feelings, sensations, you know, sort of what is being picked up by the nervous system as you're moving, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, conversations, and I'm just going to preface this, pardon me, I'm suffering with allergies right now, so you're going to hear me cough
and clear
my throat and all that wonderful human stuff that we go through today.
Well,
I live in Sacramento. What am I going to say?
I know. The city of trees. Be damned.
So, yes, ultimately, I would love to get everyone to that wonderful feeling state. And that was something I came to find importance within years ago. Like when I first became an instructor, I sort of tried to get my students out of the thinking phase and into the feeling phase. And what I had noticed is it had become really sort of an automatic canned response.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know, they'd say, oh, there's so much to think about. I'm like, yeah, you're right. There's so much to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was sort of like a very blasé, casual shifting of the conversation. You know, oftentimes that would start a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it would become, you know, like, well, what do you feel or what do you notice or whatever it is. And I can blatantly, crystal clear, remember when I had the revelation that I mentioned sort of in the article. I was training someone on the core line, and I was standing there and watching them move. And I had given them, and especially on the core line, like I don't give a lot of technical cues mm-hmm. on the core line. Anything that's like technically cued on the core line, I'm usually much more hands-on,
mm-hmm.
more so than put your this here and do this. So I'm pretty sure that I wasn't giving them a lot of technical physical cues. But whatever cueing I had done, this client said, and I was sort of standing back from him, just watching, and this client goes, there's so much to think about. And for a moment, you know, I really wanted to give the, you're right, there's so much to feel cue. And just something shifted. I was sitting there and I was watching them, and I could just feel how nervous they were on the core line. Not nervous that they were going to fall off or hurt themselves. They were anxious and nervous about doing the movement incorrectly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a little of my teaching philosophy, I mean, my teaching philosophy in general is that you're probably not going to get a movement incorrect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's just that you're just moving.
Yeah.
But specifically on the core line, I think for me, like core line in specific is, you know, just a free reign of movement. Like we're just sort of working out movement strategies on the core line.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just so interesting to me that, you know, I'm like, on the core line, there's so much to think about. Like, what are you talking about? And so it was just this, you know, it was just this revelation of, oh, what they're really saying is, there's so much to think about, equal sign, I'm really worried that I'm going to get something wrong.
Right.
I'm really, really, really anxious about doing this incorrectly.
Right.
And so it sort of caused me pause, and I thought, oh, they don't need my canned response of there's so much to feel, because that's yet another thing for them to have to search for and do.
Mm-hmm.
What they need is permission. In that moment, they just need permission to acknowledge, A, that they're, you know, intimidated, that they're worried, that there is a fear in getting something wrong.
Right.
And then sort of guidance in how to process through that.
Mm-hmm.
And in the article, you know, it wasn't until, and that was a while ago that sort of happened. And then, you know, I think through, you know, just research and then conversations with you, you know, the series of top-down versus bottom-up processing
mm-hmm.
have become more and more prevalent in my sphere of knowing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it's like they're really stuck in a top-down process mode here, where everything is like, okay, this is what I'm hearing the instructor say. So I'm going to create a vision of what it is that I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And then internally, now I'm going to have to squeeze here, push here, hold this, not move that. Oh, and also remember to breathe and create some sort of rhythm
mm-hmm.
with this,
mm-hmm.
something I've never done before, you know, versus a bottom-up process of like, well, what does it feel like, you know, when I push out on this cart, what does that feel like? What is the resistance informing my body?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was this very... in the moment, it was just a very clear, like, oh, no, they're not saying that there's so much to think about. They're saying that there's so much to get wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then how do I actually work with this? Like, how do I help guide someone out of this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what the article was about.
Yeah, and what have you found successful? Like, what are some of the strategies?
Well, I think just, you know, opening up dialogue is, I think, you know, like I said, I sort of, when a client says there's so much to think about, I immediately know, like, we're done dictating cues for right now.
Right.
There is no more cueing to be done here. There's no more clarification of cues. We're just not going to do cues.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do is start a conversation. And so we'll often go like, well, what are you, you know, like, well, tell me what are you thinking about?
Mm-hmm.
What about this is thoughtful? So talk me through your process. Like, what are you doing? What are you informing your body to do right now?
Mm-hmm.
And that will sort of give me a cue as to like, well, where is the processing coming from? You know, are you trying to stabilize right now, or are you trying to move right now?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Are you trying to, you know, like where in that movement matrix are you stuck?
Right.
You know, like what is going on for you within the experience? And then I'll often cue things like, well, what seems, and generally what I'll really do is I'll just give them permission to even say that they're worried about getting it wrong.
Yes.
And I'll say something like, you know, are you afraid of getting this wrong?
Yes.
I try to stay away from afraid, because
right.
I even mentioned that in the article. It was a really ugly experience with the word afraid, and I really try to stay away from that. But I'll say something like, you know, is there worry that you might get this wrong, or are you intimidated that you might get this wrong, or what would be so wrong with getting this wrong?
Yeah.
And that will start a conversation, at least that highlights that getting it wrong is within their brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then I'll sort of assure them that there is no getting it wrong. You know, it's one of the most beautiful teaching moments I've ever witnessed about getting things wrong. Elizabeth Larkham came to teach at my studio, and I have a good friend who was a client of mine for a long time, and Elizabeth Larkham was working with her. And this client was a very, very top-down processor.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything was made overly arduous by the brain.
Right.
And, you know, and she was kind of stunted within a movement. And Elizabeth Larkham just kind of looked at, I don't know why I keep calling it Elizabeth Larkham, like, I don't know, like, like President so-and-so. So Elizabeth looks... So Elizabeth looks at this client and is like, what's the worry? Because you've done this so many times, you should be getting this right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is your first time doing this. Give yourself permission to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself permission to sort get it wrong. And I was like, oh, okay. That was a really lovely teaching moment of just breaking it down and creating a safe space for potential failure.
Yes.
And to go, like, that doesn't matter. This is your first time. It was giving permission to top-down process. Like, I understand that this is what you have to do at this moment. And I'm giving you permission to get it wrong if that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, there's no penalty for getting it wrong. And, you know, so I'll just kind of create a safe space there. And that comes client to client, you know, like we all know how our clients, you talk to each client differently.
Sure.
So whatever your colloquialisms are with that client, then, you know, that's what you would use to sort of introduce that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I'll just sort of, you know, begin to ask more questions of like, well, what's difficult about this movement for you? What's easy about this movement for you? What do you like or not like about this movement? Where do you think you could use some work? What are you really good at here? And sort of create, it's really a picture for myself of going like, oh, well, this is where the check marks are, and this is where the X's are, and these are the blank spaces that we sort of need to work on within this.
Mm-hmm.
And then just sort of turning it, you know, if I'll try to introduce root routine movements. So if it's, if I can create something that makes sense, like an external cue that makes sense for the movement, then I'll try to bring that in. Something that they're a little more familiar with, you know, instead of doing footwork, we're now standing and squatting. You know, that's that's the one I always turn to because it's the easiest. It's like, you know, that's all footwork is. It's stand and squat, but on your back. And, you know, and then like, well, okay, well, can you feel how this relates to this? Or, you know, and that's sort of my back avenue way to get them back into the feeling phase. So trickling down, giving them a little permission to have that fear, that worry of getting wrong, the wrongness of it, having a dialogue about the greater picture of it, relating it back to something that is familiar to them, whether it's a familiar exercise, a familiar movement pattern, and then from there, creating a sense of feel where I can get them sort of where I like to get my students, which is a little more bottom-up processing, a little more sense of awareness of feel.
It's interesting, the process that you're describing, you know, of what I tend to do, what I really like, what I feel like is so important, and it can be hard to do for teachers because I think oftentimes we are conflicted perhaps about what our role is with a student. But if you're really recognizing that there's anxiety or nervousness or, you know, about getting it right, because that's, I mean, I experience that in my own body when I'm working with a new teacher as a student, or, you know, I'm really for some reason focused on achieving the movement in a certain way. I start to feel nervous about getting it right. Like that's just, you know, that's there, I think, for all of us in different ways and different times. And to start with just acknowledging that this is something that's preventing us as a, you know, as two in a relationship, and the student specifically, from moving into that place of pleasant, successful, internally motivating or intrinsically motivating experience, and so much more. I mean, there's so much more to that. That's so, it's so important because we can't, you know, if we talk about it in the terms of, you know, if what we're really trying to do as teachers is give our students something that they can own and integrate and have for the rest of their lives, that has to be, you know, that has to be fully integrated into them, both from a cognitive perspective and a physiological perspective. And we are never going to get there unless we can really just say, we can just say, look, there's an elephant in the room and it's wearing a sign that says you better get this right or otherwise you're wasting your time. You're going to let your teacher down. You're, you know, you're a failure, whatever it might be. And then, you know, it's like, so sometimes I was just thinking when you were giving your examples that what it often comes down to me is like, there's a risk, right? It's risky. It's like risky to be vulnerable. It's risky to show your imperfections. It feels, you know, that feels, it's just like, that's like exposing yourself, you know, and even though your intention, it, you know, you're there to improve and to gain and to grow. And yet we carry this around of like, we are expecting ourselves to be perfect or to get it right on the first time or to be living up to what we think are the other person's expectations. And it does feel very risky to be that vulnerable. And I think sometimes, and as you said, it just depends on the teacher. So, I mean, on the student so much, but it's like, what do you feel like is at risk here of like, just, you know, relaxing into the movement or just allowing yourself to get it wrong? You know, and really acknowledging that there's maybe a feeling of like, this is a really risky situation to be in, and not safety wise, but just as, you know, being seen. And I think this is another piece of the student teacher relationship and that paradigm that we don't always talk about explicitly. I think we all feel it and sense it in some way, but that there is, it can be intense because the student is allowing us to see them or not, right? And to hear them. And there's just all of this there can feel like there is a lot at risk, and acknowledging that in some way, whatever way resonates with you and your own teaching style, I think is so critical for opening those doors to real progress and moving forward. And it's lovely the way that you're describing, you know, taking them out of worry, right? Anxiety, which affects the nervous system, and that's going to affect the way the brain learns. And so it affects how much they hold on to in terms of their motor skill, you know, learning. And then painting this kind of picture for yourself, like, and not just for you as a teacher, but, you know, creating this kind of map of what you said, you know, the check boxes, the X's and the blank spots,
yeah.
Like where, you know, what is the whole picture? Like what's going on, getting a bigger sense, a more global sense of what the student needs. And then also opening up the student themselves to see that, you know, that it's, you know, instead of being myopically focused on it being, it, the only goal, the only objective is getting it right, that you can then begin to expand their sense of rightness so that it just becomes about being. Like, what is happening right now? The one thing, the thing I really, really like and I think is so critical is this last piece that you're talking about, you know, bringing them back to something that's simple, that they've done before, that they've had success in, that you know they've had you know, like a clear feeling sense of, because that I think does a lot of things. That shifts us mentally and physically from top down to bottom up, because it's already an experience that we've had. So there's less of that piece by piece, analytical, very effortful thinking, right? So we're like, oh, that's just something I can be in, I can do without a lot of mental gymnastics.
Yeah.
And it's also often a pleasant experience. And it's in those moments where we have more opportunity, more likelihood of actually building those implicit memories. And then that's what leads us to further bottom up processing and further progression down this, you know, this line of competency, right? Where we're trying to get people to the end. And a lot of you have heard me talk about this, and I know James and I have touched on it, the competency progression, right, from unconscious incompetence to unconscious competence and then beyond that. But it's the only way, really, is to really literally soften, mentally, emotionally soften, and move in this direction of bottom-up processing. The trick is it has to start. It's like we get, it's an interesting, like flow chart. I don't even know if we could draw it, but maybe, you know, when we come in or we're walking around in our lives with all of our bottom up, right. That's habits and patterns are bottom up.
Yeah.
They're intuitive. They're something we've done, you know, for a very long time. And then we have to, the ones that are not serving us, we have to shake ourselves out of the bottom-up processing and flip it over to top-down, and we have to spend some time there. But there is this real moment, and many moments, right? It's maybe continuous moments where we're looking to shift from top-down to bottom-up again with a new effective, efficient, you know, more pleasant sensing experience. So this is this interesting flip-flopping in terms of the brain that has to happen so that it's not static, right? It's not one being right or one being wrong, but this kind of progression through the different ways of processing information that has to happen to get us into that new, really owning, embodying that new pattern. So this stuff is just so fascinating to me. It's so interesting. You know, we've talked about interoceptive experiences, you know, the deep internal feeling, which is often charged with the emotional quality, right? That ability to sense the body in a kind of gross homeostasis, like what's our level of homeostasis? And that's not just physical, but that's like the guts, the organs, it's the emotional context. That's also, you know, you're describing that in your process a little bit of like directing the student's attention to like, well, you know, I love what you said about, what did you say? You said, share with me, like, what's your process? Like, what are you thinking about? Tell me, tell me what your process is. I think that's also like a way of just, like releasing some pressure, right? Not only is it really, really valuable, but it's like, you just put it out there. Like, yeah, I'm freaking really hung up on this piece
we all tend to think that, even the best of teachers tend to think that people process like them. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is what would be important for me. So this is probably what I would do here. And, it's really interesting when you start asking your clients, like, what is your brain informing your body to do here? Mm-hmm. Like, what is your process for this movement? I mean, sometimes clients will say stuff and I'm like, yes, I just learned something there. Mm-hmm. And then other times, my clients will say something. I'm like, how are you a student here? How have you been coming here? And that's what you're thinking of here. Yeah. Like where, what? Like, it's just such a strange experience. Like, what do you mean that that's what you're thinking about? Which then goes like, man, I've got so much more learning to do about you.
Yeah.
Because I still don't, man, I've spent a lot of time with you and I still don't know you. I still don't know your body. Like, that's so amazing to me.
Yeah. Well, I think that is particularly powerful because I do think it's very easy for us as teachers, particularly when we have success or we have a succession of successes or we're a bit more experienced. I think it's very easy for us to show up, in this way, kind of holding, like, we know what works. We know what doesn't work. We know this particular student, like, we've got them pegged, and we know exactly what to give them to help them progress. And, it's like, I mean, in those moments where I have shown up like that, my real experience is like, I end up totally screwed, like, and feeling like maybe the worst I have ever felt about my teaching. It's like, it doesn't work to assume that you know, because the truth is, how could you ever really know the body in front of you fully or the mind in the body? Yeah. It's just, it's, I think, a beautiful, motivation for showing up with this, just this belief or intention, perhaps, of like, I really don't know how it's going to go today. I really don't know if we're going to be able to achieve this or move you in this direction, because I'll never know. No, I just never know all the nooks and crannies and all the ways in which your body can express itself and be, motivated or driven by your mind, your psychology, your emotional states. Like, the moment we assume that we know, it's like you've put shackles on you both, It's so interesting. And yet we have to show up.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I can just imagine what people are thinking. It's like, yeah, well, that's all great, tutti frutti, but what about, what about the skill? Like, you have to bring knowledge and skill and your tools. And of course that's all true.
So that goes right into exactly what I was just going to say. It sort of depends on, like, you, the instructor, what is your motivation for showing up? Like, if your motivation is to show up and teach exercises, I can certainly see where all of this wouldn't be as important. Mm-hmm. If your belief is, I just teach the exercise and the exercise does the magic.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Certainly there is a bit of that. Like, that's how we learn to walk. It's like,
right.
No one has an intelligent conversation with you about the right and wrong way to walk. You just do it and then you figure it out. So, within just teaching an exercise, I'm sure that, there is some of this that is going on in a very nuanced, shadowy sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's its own thing. But, you know, for me, I show up and I am most interested in relationships. I am most interested in dialoguing. I am most interested in presence.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that I'm teaching an exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, the intention to show up is different than I show up to teach exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, that's what happens to be going on in the room.
Right.
You know, that's not what I'm here for. I'm here for something other. I am here for the conversation we're having right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sort of, I guess you could say, like, one is a top-down process and the other one is a bottom-up process.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
like just a different way of going about it. Not that there's not, you know, not in that just teach exercise way that all of this isn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
And not that in the, you know, like, feel your way through it, that you're not creating skill.
Right.
Because you are.
Yeah.
It's just a different way of, you know, it's you know, did you turn left or did you turn right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's either happening or not happening, though, at this level where you are teaching the exercises. Like, that's what you, if that's how you're showing up, like, that's your priority, is to teach the exercises. And I love that, because my teacher, Carol, would say to me, trust the method. Like, just trust the method. Like, teach the exercises and trust the method, which also meant to me, trust the body, right? Trust that the human body is capable. And that, to me, brings so much, like, life and energy to teaching the exercises. However, I think we can teach the exercises, and we can teach in a way that is, that reinforces top-down processing as the priority, where it's like, right, this is the movement. This is the goal. The goal is the movement. The goal is this concrete end expression. And that's what we're doing. That's what we're always doing. That's what we're like, that is our one and only goal. In which case, I feel like then teaching the exercises is, you know, can be held in a very rigid, very right and wrong kind of way, where, maybe trusting the method, means to you, don't trust the body in front of you and make it conform to the exercises, which it's like, that's it. You know, it's not for me. It's like, I think a lot of people get value out of that. I think a lot of people need that mentally and emotionally. So there's a place for that. But what I want to say to the teachers that are listening is that I think that you can do both of these things simultaneously. I think that you can show up with a trust in the thing that you teach, which is, let's just say, you know, the common thread for us is Pilates, the method Pilates. Like, show up and teach the exercises as your intention, holding that the work is enough. Like, taking the body through these movements is so valuable. But I think that if you hold at the same time the trust of the body in front of you, that what you do is all the things that we are saying, but in a different way, right? You're allowing, and you've heard me say this before, like, you're allowing the body to be in whatever current expression of the movement it's in. And you're using touch, and you're potentially using language, or maybe it's the other way around. You're using language and potentially touch for most teachers, to facilitate, like, an acceptance of the current experience. Like, this is your body in the work right now, and it's learning and it's exploring. And yes, it's not perfect, but perfect is boring, and that's not the goal. Like, it doesn't end. It's like, you don't arrive at the perfect teaser ever. Like, that's just not what happens. Right? The human body is brilliantly capable and absolutely imperfect. So there's no arriving. Like, there's no arriving at the perfect expression. There only is the current expression and all that you can get out of that. And I think you can show up in a way that's like, I trust the method. I'm here to teach the exercises. And what I also trust is that the body in front of me is capable and can either does know itself or can learn to know and trust itself. And then I think you can facilitate, you know, all the things that we're talking about. I don't know. I think that's maybe all I had to say. it was like one of those abrupt endings. Like I reached the edge of the cliff and that was like, all right, there's no more ground.
You ran full force to the edge of the cliff. You stopped just in time.
That's so funny.
I just have to say, I love you. No. I love you. I love everything. I love everything you just said there. And I always, like, every time we're on this podcast, I feel like this sentence comes around. Mm. I literally just wrote a blog about that today.
And what happened
my
last
blog
night?
For today is Why I Don't Teach Fitness. Mm-hmm. And it's all about sort of that concept of, to me, so what I mean by that is, so it takes something like the teaser, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's several ways you can just teach the teaser. So you can just teach the teaser as sort of as an end means, right? Like mm-hmm. there is something magical and special about the period at the end of a teaser sentence, right? Mm-hmm. Or you could kind of look at it and go, well, what is that movement? What is that period? What is the sentence leading up to that teaching the body mm-hmm. about how to move within yes. that sphere, within that space, within that stimulus? And both of those, you're just teaching the teaser, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's no extra. You're not teaching a movement that looks kind of like the teaser. You know, you can teach the teaser, whatever version you're teaching. But it's the energy behind it. Mm-hmm. One is sort of an end goal. To me, that's like fitness. It's mm-hmm. like, the reason I don't teach fitness is, you know, to me, fitness is the outcome. Mm-hmm. It's not the process.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the teaser is sort of the outcome. That is the period at the end of the sentence. Mm-hmm. But what is going on as you approach and retreat from the teaser mm-hmm. is much more interesting to me than the actual, you know, architecture of what your teaser looks like or doesn't look
right.
like.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I would even venture to say, like, are you really teaching Pilates if all you're doing is teaching the teaser?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and if all you're doing is teaching, you have to achieve this shape. Like, I don't know if you're actually teaching Pilates.
Right.
Like, I don't know if you're actually teaching a method.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're teaching an exercise. I think
right.
you're teaching a shape. But I don't think you're teaching the intention,
mm-hmm.
the embodiment, the, you know, the return. I mean, it's in the goddamn title. I mean,
I know.
Return to life. So it's, you know, it's not do these exercises, you know, it's like return to life and by doing these movements,
yeah.
you know, this is your color palette. What do you do with it?
Yeah.
I've reached the end of my cliff.
Yeah, yeah. you know, it's like this could be a whole other conversation, and maybe it will be at some point. But I think it is interesting how many teachers I've come into contact with, and who haven't read, you know, Joseph's own words. And what I think
yeah.
is so, it's so powerful. And I think you have to do, like, maybe just maybe it takes a bit of maturity within the method as a teacher to read between the lines.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
Wholehearted. Because, you're not going to get it in their first 5 years.
Yeah. Well, and you have to, I think though, you have to read it. You have to read it in the beginning and then you have to carry it around.
Yeah.
Like a, you know, it's like the guidebook, like carry it around. I mean, my original copy is falling to pieces. I mean, the pages are all out of order. They're highlighted, they're underlined, they're dog-eared, they're stained with coffee. I mean, it's like, read it and reread it and reread it and reread it and reread it. Because what's so interesting to me is he does say, just do the exercises. Like, I love the, like, stalwart, like, like, get over it, get to it, get over it, stop making excuses,
yeah.
just do the exercises. And then we're just kind of left in terms of technique, which is maybe, I'm just make this is very interesting to me. Maybe it's like, that's it. Here are the pictures, here are the exercises, simple instruction, do it. Stop kvetching, stop complaining, stop making excuses, like just do, just move, right? And then all of his other words are like, you know, change the world, change your life. Like
yeah.
all of these yeah. like very deep philosophical, like it's body, mind, and spirit. It's your soul. It's the whole thing. It's like, you know, control over the mind, control over the body. There are all of these. It's just like this beautiful litany of intense philosophical perspectives. And I think what happens for people is that they're totally oblivious to the, you know, latter part. And all they see is the technique part. And because unless you studied with him or you studied with one of the elders, that potentially there is a lot lacking in that. Right, the technical end. So we fill it. Over the years, we've just filled that bucket until it's ridiculously overflowing. Like, we have so much focus on how should you do the exercises? This is the way you should do them. Just like this. This is the formula, right? But really, if you look at it, it is this, it's not that at all. It's this beautiful blend of get over it, do the exercises, and here's what we're working toward. Here are the nuances. Here's the essence. Here's the original intent. And it's beautiful and it's sweet and it's complex. And it's about your relationship with yourself and your relationship with, you know, the world. It's like, but those two things, what's so interesting is like, they're not separate. You know, it's the
yeah,
same.
Yeah.
It's like one is facilitating the other. And this is, I think, what we were talking about just moments ago of like, you can teach the movement, teach the method, but trust the relationship that you're in with your student and with the method itself. Trust the body and allow for it to be totally imperfect, totally, totally imperfect all the time. That it's just like
yeah.
show up for the experience, whatever the experience is. I was thinking about
exactly.
this.
Show up for the process.
The process, exactly. And this, just to bring us full circle to the kind of the heart of the article from my interpretation and what we were talking about earlier, the difference between top down and bottom up, is that something that I have learned about bottom up processing and, you know, the building of implicit memory. There are all of these links again to interoceptive experience, right? Being able to shift and become aware of the interoceptive perception of the body and self is indicative of implicit memory building. Implicit memory building is deeply linked to motor skill acquisition. It's like when we learn to walk, what you're talking, it's like we don't need somebody giving us a barrage of cues. What we need to do is practice it consistently. And learning happens almost on accident through consistent repetition, failing, and mistake making. And then consistent repetition, failing, and making mistakes, and adapting, and making mistakes, and adapting. It's like that's how we, on a very biological level, we learn how to move. And it's like, I think that there,
yeah.
We stop doing that. I mean, at least we get stuck. I think many of us as teachers get stuck in the first phase, right? Which is top down. It's the over processing. It's the pulling everything apart. And we just, it's like, we haven't been taught how to move forward.
Go ahead.
No, that's right. No.
It's also like getting back to the, you know, the walking metaphor too, and the bottom up processing. I think what often happens too, especially in like a studio environment or a personal trainer environment, is even when a client is willing to let themselves go to a bottom up processing, you know, where maybe it gets a little more experimental, maybe they tiptoe into that.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of a child, you know, learning to walk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, think of everyone around them. What do? The minute that baby takes a step, fumbles, whatever, everyone congratulates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a, it's a huge yay for you moment. Where in a studio environment, often what I've seen is if a client does something and it's wrong, it's like, no, that was wrong, but if you do this instead.
Yes.
And so you have just not, and it's often done from a place of good intention. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm trying to help you get better. But what you've just done is you haven't corrected a movement. You've squashed a means of processing.
That's
you've
right.
squashed a means of exploration. So instead of, you know, that's why I am very permissive with allowing my clients to get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then creating a dialogue of like, okay, well, that was your, and what I'll often do is say, you know, if I'm going to do squats, you know, for instance, I'll say, okay, do 5 of your squats.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll let them do whatever it is that they're going to do with that information. And then I'll say something like, well, now we're going to do 5 of my squats. So that it is different from what, you know, if need be, it is different from what they have just done. But I haven't negated what they've just done. What they've done is a movement, and it's a movement that is true for them.
Right.
But it may not be the optimal movement or the movement that is going to positively stress what I'm trying to stress.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of saying, well, that was wrong, and this is what we need to change about it, I'll just simply make it a different movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So framing it not as a, this is what we're trying to achieve versus not achieve, or, you know, what's right and what's wrong. Just, it's just another
You're
option.
Wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is just such a wonderful and important conversation to have, I think. And one, I hope that we can continue to have, and looking at just these different pieces. What I really want to ask is that the teachers that are listening is to connect with us and let us know what you think about this. And like, how does this make sense to you in your own teaching experience? What do you struggle with? What do you, you know, what do you have great tools for? And what do you feel like you don't have tools for? And how would you like to, you know, be able to shift and change and improve your teaching, or, I mean, just make it different. Just explore with a different way of teaching. I would love, I think James and I, as Deborah and I usually say, you know, it's like we want to be driven by your questions and your experiences. So here's a real genuine call for you guys to reach out to us and send us your thoughts. You can certainly comment at the bottom of the post page here that you found the link on originally, that's probably where you're at. But if you're in iTunes or listening to this from some other place, so the email is thinkingpilatespodcast@gmail.com. Thinkingpilatespodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. And you can email us and let us know, like, what do you think about this and where would you like to see us take this conversation? Or is there a piece of this conversation that feels like would, you know, you'd like to hear us explore more, or like, would you like to be on with us? Would you like to be on with us and talk to us?
Because
that would be cool. And we're definitely, you know, we would like to do more of that. So I think we'll wrap it up. We've just got some really great stuff. You know, we've done some really great stuff recently and we've got a lot of great stuff coming up. So keep listening. And I hope you're enjoying this new variety of banter between James and I. And I hope that one day soon James and Deborah and I will be on together, hopefully not in the too distant future. All right. Anything else from you, James? Any wrap up final thoughts?
No, I think that's great, and I too highly encourage people to connect, because the conversation will only get richer the more dialogue that is going on there. I'm sure someone out there is listening, like, oh yeah, you know, I do this in the studio and it works really well,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I don't know what I don't know, so I'm really interested. It really just comes down to being selfish. I just want to learn more.
Yeah.
So please connect, and I want to know more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So all the contact information too is in the show notes So you can find it there. But once again, it's thinkingpilatespodcast@gmail.com. And now we'd like to share with you our pro tip and hero for this episode. Our pro tip is to play with open questions. Now, this may not seem like a very unique idea, but open questions are a significant part of many coaching and therapeutic methods that not only allow a practitioner to extrapolate information from a student's own insights and internal experiences, but help the teacher to shift from the perspective of needing to know to being comfortable not knowing, shifting the priority to curiosity and listening rather than problem solving and fixing. Open questions are a critical part of a method called motivational interviewing and are used to help a person discover for themselves the truth of their situation, to become more aware of their current state, their motivations, and the space between where they are and where they want to go. Open questions are just what they sound like. They're not yes or no questions. They're questions that evoke a thoughtful response. So here's a scenario. When your student is struggling with achieving a movement, instead of cueing them to correct, try asking questions like, how could you do X differently? Can you tell me what X feels like now as you push out, pull in, roll back, etc.? Pause for a moment and rest. Can you tell me where you're feeling the strongest sensation? You could also direct the student's attention at this point to an area of the body for a more specific inquiry or insight if you see something that you're trying to deepen your understanding of, or trying to confirm something that you see or something that you suspect is happening. Another question you can ask would be, how would you describe what it feels like to X, roll back, roll up, curl up, push down, etc.? If you could choose one word to describe how this movement feels, what would it be? You can also ask questions about what the student is experiencing in terms of strategy or the process that they're going through to think about the movement. These open questions empower the student to feel their experience rather than think their experience. And what they do is, if the student is in a thinking mode, they can help to shift the student into a feeling mode, but they also give you a tremendous amount of insight as to what the student's experience is rather than you just assuming. Feeling experience, felt sense, can be a much more powerful guide for a student when developing new strategies. It allows the strategies to arise out of the current state of the body rather than to be manufactured based on some string of things they have to do. This kind of questioning promotes bottom-up processing rather than top-down. At least it can be the intent, but it definitely depends on the kinds of questions you're asking. Open questions can also help us bypass cognitive overload and shift out of cognitive overload. When a student is experiencing cognitive overload, they stop processing, they stop listening, they stop being able to feel, and it often triggers other fears. I'm not capable, I'm not good, not smart, not fit enough to do this, and other things. Open questions allow us to reframe the movement experience and shift the authoring of the work from us to the student. We, as a teacher, are not in charge. We're just witnessing and nudging. So how can you nudge your students towards a more bottom-up experience using open questions? So your mission, should you choose to accept it, next time you're inclined to cue your student out of trouble, don't do it. Instead, ask an open question. Keep it simple. See if you can get them to author their own experience, to notice what's really happening within them, and allow that to lead them. Can't wait to hear how it goes. So please feel free to share with us either via the comments below in the post or via email. And finally, our hero for this episode is Dr. Dan Siegel, author of the book Mind Sight. Dr. Siegel is a clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA School of Medicine and the founding co-director of the Mindful Awareness Research Center at UCLA. He's also the executive director of the MindSight Institute. Among other topics, Dr. Siegel explores mindfulness, the mind and brain, and interpersonal neurobiology. His work is relevant to us as teachers because it helps us understand another aspect of the human experience, as well as the depth of how we form relationships with our bodies, ourselves and the world around us. Now, Dr. Siegel's work has made a significant impression on both James and I, and we hope that you'll enjoy exploring it for yourself. Some of the other books that you might enjoy by Dr. Siegel are Mind, Healing Trauma, and The Mindful Brain. So we've got those links in the show notes. Be sure to check some of these things out. Add it to your teaching pile, your teaching stack of resources. Mindsight was the first book I ever read. I think it's a wonderful introductory book to his work and so much really beautiful, relevant information for us as teachers. So I hope you get an opportunity to really dive into that. You'll also see in the show notes links to James's articles, the one that we referenced in the last podcast and the one we reference here, two articles actually that we reference in this one. So you can link to those and read to your heart's content. Otherwise, you can reach us at thinkingpilatespodcast@gmail.com. You can also like us on Facebook. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast and look forward to the next time. Until then, breathe deep and teach well. All the things that make you sing and tap your little toes.